You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
It is so good to be back with you. I think if you all have known me, you know the last time I was here, I told you that I'm a little rusty because I don't do this very much anymore. The last time I did this was the last time I was here. So please bear with me. If you see me looking, and I love what David does, but I have to kind of refresh myself, and I have such a good team who is always there to help and support and make sure that I don't botch it too much, but you know I'm gonna. So I do this because I can't say no to David. Does anybody else have that problem? I cannot. As a matter of fact, SSP, it's so great to see some of the SSP alumni. I'm so glad your church is continuing to participate. I guess you needed an extra chaperone, and David called me. I'm going, oh my gosh, my daughter's, you know, graduated out of it. But you know what? My daughter is so excited I'm going to do it, even if it can't be with her. And of course, to do it with David and to be with the youth of this church and the youth of other great churches doing such beautiful work is a privilege. So I'm here because I also love this congregation. To me, you are one of the great prophetic congregations. You're out there. You are truly living out acts of justice, and I'm grateful for that. And anything I can do to just feel that and be a part of that, I want to be able to do that. And it's Father's Day, and I know I told David I was doing it for him, but you also have Dad's Root Beer, and you just can't find that, so that's why I am here, really, for the Dad's Root Beer. Don't tell David. But it is Father's Day, and it's a day in which we celebrate the fathers in our lives who help model and inspire all of us. And you know, we're not just celebrating those with children, but we're celebrating those who are single men as well, or men without children. All men who help and nurture us and are those who help us aspire to be great, great, great human beings. And I want to make it clear also that we're not talking about the traditional roles of men fitting into them by any means, that hunter-gatherer concepts, because all that stuff was supposed to go out with the cavemen, and somehow it didn't, but it's still around, but it should have. But we're talking about men who inspire and model dignity, compassion, and a willingness to work for the good of all, and not just themselves or just a few people they care about. And that's why it's truly to see that a good man is one that no matter what the stereotypes might be, that he is able to break through those and live into the true realities of what inspiration and goodness and kindness and compassion is about. Now, back when I was a kid, we had just moved into a brand new neighborhood, and my mom in a new school district as well, here in the Valley. And my mom wanted to break into the PTA at the time, so she was holding a luncheon for what was back then mostly women in the PTA. And as they came over to our house, it was going to be the debut of her and the debut of our house. She wanted everything to be absolutely perfect, and that included changing out the toilet seat that had broken in what would be the closest restroom. It's a man's job, so we thought. And to my knowledge, it was the first time the Reagan family had ever tackled a toilet other than jiggling the handle to try to get it to stop. Now, keep in mind, if you will, that for those of you that know me, my father's father was a United Methodist minister and district superintendent, and his father was completely absent. So the handyman gene had worked its way out of our family a long, long time ago. And my father was a great, great father. He really was. But when it came to fixing things, well, let's just say that our toolbox at home consisted of a hammer, a pliers, and a screwdriver, and they were rarely, if ever, used. The one thing my dad did teach us all through, and he must have repeated it 1,000 times, was whenever we were dealing with something mechanical, don't force it. Don't force it. Over and over and over again all my life, I heard, don't force it. And this doesn't exactly explain why, as I was helping him, and he was supposedly teaching me how to change a toilet seat, which he'd never done before, I saw that he couldn't loosen the little bolt, and so I saw that he had the pliers around it, and I saw his hand go way back, and he went wham, definitely forcing it. Something did happen. We heard it. Something changed. We didn't know what it was. We both stood back thinking something's taking place here, but it's, and all of a sudden, right before my very eyes, it was like Moses had appeared or Charlton Heston, because the waters began to part, the toilet split right down the middle all the way to the base, and water started going. You got the fountain over here? I swear we were competing with you. It was going everywhere. And luckily, we knew how to turn off the water. I don't know where that came from, but instinctively, we thought one of those two little valves ought to do this, and so we both shot back behind there and got it turned off. But what do you do with a split toilet? And my mom was so upset because it was going to be the next day. All the ladies were going to be descending on this house that she was ready to show off and say, we're here, we're important to you. I don't know which one of us came up with the brilliant idea to take the clear packaging tape and kind of put it back together while the other one kind of wrapped it around. But we did it, and we hung a nice little note on the door saying, please use the bathroom down the hallway, not this one. So it was going to be a very disappointing moment for my mom, and she really was not happy with this, but what were we going to do? There was no time to make any other changes. The party was unaffected for the most part. Until that is, Mrs. Crewson, who was kind of the leader of the community in many ways, and who was very prim and proper, very few people passed met with her approval at all. I'd kind of say, to be honest with you, a snob and kind of elitist and that type of thing. She came to my mother, and she was looking kind of sheepish at the time, and she was kind of hemming and hawing, and she was trying to explain that something went wrong with the facilities when she was using them. Now, evidently, it's a mystery as to how, but somehow the sign had fallen off. And when Mrs. Crewson decided to use the restroom, the rather large Mrs. Crewson, large-ish, and situated herself, the tape could not withstand the challenge and gave way with her on it. She was deeply embarrassed and apologetic for having demolished our commode. Now it's a little unclear if we ever explained to Mrs. Crewson as to whether or not it had happened before. So I got a gut feeling we never did. We just decided to kind of let her kind of, you know, assume so she wouldn't know we had a broken toilet. Now, luckily for lots of us men, it is not a requirement to have some type of handy capabilities anymore around the house. It's not the goal for having purpose here in humanity. So what is our purpose? What is the role of men in this new century? Is it any different from the past? The past is what it is. Most societies, as you know, revolved around men, built patriarchal systems where men ruled. The role of the male was to dominate, and it became an unchallenged given throughout most of history. Biblical understandings that were developed out of those cultures evolved, and it was deemed a natural state of existence for men to lead, protect, and rule. That's history. Now, the great advantage to being dominant in any society is that the game is always played to your advantage, always. Life is good for those in control. Even if there is a cost to others, the argument is always put forth that it is ultimately for the good of society that we do these things, so things must stay the same as they've always been. And we see this argument made in more conservative Christian traditions today, even defending the natural state of God's creation as being male-led. I don't know how many of you remember a movement that started in the 1990s or so. It was the Promise Keepers, the men's movement, where men were gathered throughout the nation in major, huge coliseums like we have, all trying to get in touch. The ills of society were that men had lost their roles in society. We needed to reinstate them and get them back and get it to where men were submissively, of course, made it really clear, it doesn't mean you're abusive, but men are the head and women are submissive, and that's the kind of the way it works, and that's what they were going to reclaim, and the world would be perfect again. History has also taught us that oppressive powers gains much force through the claim of submission to the great moral, to their great moral purpose. Men have used this force against women, whites against blacks. Nations have invoked superiority against nations. Christians against Jews, Nazis against non-Aryan peoples. Christians denigrating lesbian, bisexual, transgender, gay folk over and over. And the list is endless all the way throughout history. And you know what? Look at history. In nearly every instance in history, where oppression is invoked in the name of some type of superiority or anything else, such groups have eventually fallen, and fallen hard, to their demise. Now, that being acknowledged, it makes no sense to me whatsoever that the rationale for superiority over any group is the intention of Scripture. And somehow that gets invoked over and over again. I believe it's a distortion of God and Christianity to make it be about anything else than equality. So I think it's important for us to take a little bit of a look, if we can, at history and see if we can determine the greater ways that Scripture empowers, contrary to a lot of thinking that still exists today. So if I can, I want to just tell you about or have you think about and contemplate a few different perspectives. First, in the Hebrew Testament, God is a God who continuously liberates the people from bondage. God is a God of the oppressed. God is a God who liberates the marginalized. That's God. That's God. Now, second, take a look at the Christian scriptures. It reveals a story of that same God in work in history. Now, Jesus is the active reflection of that work in history. It's God in our midst. And as a justice bearer, healer of pain-filled humanity, and one with profound relational presence who incarnates God in our world. And in understanding Jesus, we're not talking about anything to do with domination, and we're not talking anything to do with submission, and we're not talking about any type of claims of superiority over any other single group of people. We're talking about total freedom. Total freedom in God's love and striving for it. Now, Jesus' ministry and activities in the world are centered in a quality of mutuality all the way throughout the Bible. He was always aware of the fundamental human similarities amongst us that connect individuals to individuals and individuals to the world. As a matter of fact, he intimately identified with the needs, with the limitations, the longings, and joys of those he shared life with. And this morning, just a few moments ago, we heard in Matthew, as Matthew tells about Jesus going from city to city, teaching and proclaiming the good news. And when he saw the crowds, we're told that he had compassion for them. He had compassion for them because they were harassed peoples and helpless people. He had compassion. Harassed by whom? Helpless before whom? Something was missing. Where were the shepherds who were entrusted to care for these people? And I think Jesus seems to be making some type of indictment upon the worship ministry and religious institution of the society that day. Where was their compassion? Where was society's compassion? So here now, Jesus engages in a ministry to persons, for some of those who've been excluded from society, from the care and ministry in particular of the very religious institutions that were supposed to be taking care of them and picking them up and lifting them up into something great. And instead, the propaganda of the day is supporting just the opposite. Maybe they were excluded because of biblical law. They were eating the wrong foods. Whole list of things that are good and not good. Or they were slaves, as some found the scriptures even to support such an existence. Or maybe they were women who had little or no power at that time in society. Or maybe it was because they were of different skin colors and classes and castes in that day. But what we quickly learn, and you see today, is none of that mattered to Jesus. None of it. When the institution turns itself away, what we see today is the authentic ministry of God's people begins. And when the institution became about just us, Jesus was calling for the people of God to be about justice, justice. He sent the laborers out into the world to try to help correct a society that had become about just us. His passion was so very evident. He was led by passion. Jesus was calling on the people of God with a passion that had an energy and a power behind it that moved him into more complex and dangerous risks, which always moved him into the future on behalf of others, rarely on behalf of himself. And nowhere, nowhere is Jesus portrayed as being dominating his household. Nowhere is he portrayed as calling to others to be submissive to himself or anyone else. Just the opposite. So there's a call this morning to be heard. The role of men for the future, if you want to listen to this, is huge. And it's liberating. And that's very different from what many are being told today. Very different. Because ours is to work for a world where all of God's children are at the same level of opportunity. It's to teach our sons and daughters to do the same, to work for the liberation of all. And ours is to be persons of faith who are sensitive to the societal, cultural nuances that exist to this very day that distances us from others while proclaiming and promoting men in society. It's critical, critical that men of faith realize that our society affords us oftentimes instant power, and taking advantage of that power is to disadvantage others. And it's not only wrong, but it's also immoral. And ours is to value one another enough, to value one another enough to denounce the injustices that we see taking place, and therefore allows us to remain alive with hope and to a vision of a world without exploitation of absolutely anyone. Not immigrants, not women, not people of color, not children, not gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, or any other marginalized group in our community. Rather, ours is a call to stand up and stand with. Ours is to understand the power of compassion and how that compassion is divine, how that compassion is expressed in simple acts of acknowledging each other's fears and pains and acknowledging with them in a way that does not diminish or discount what they're feeling with any other type of variation of trying to state it so that it becomes something more broad than the pain they are truly feeling. And we do so by proclaiming your pain is real. Your cries are heard. Your anger is just. It's that power of compassion in alliance with others is also holy and divine. So our call is also to be holy. And on a day in which we celebrate men, there is a call for a few good men to step forward because the laborers are few this morning. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. A few good men is all that we need to bring a brighter future closer to a reality. So this morning, the message for all you men is that you are celebrated on this day called Father's Day. You are also called upon to lead, but to lead in a new way as our faith unfolds before us. For leading is standing side by side with others, and to see that those around you are equal to you. And if by society's chance they are not, it is to work hard to make it so. You are called to lead. And to lead a life of faith that uplifts and honors all of God's creation, and to see to it that that day comes when such truth is denied to no one. Men, you are called to lead. And by the way, everything I just said about men equally applies to women. We are all called to lead. We are all called to lead together lives reflecting the very God of love who created us equal in the image of God. Happy Father's Day, men. I look forward to walking with you and all of the women as we walk together and hear the beautiful call to be equal leaders in the dream of God. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.